multi-capable airman concept. The idea that airmen train for tasks beyond their core specialty, often in cross-functional teams for combat support in austere or contested environments. But what does that mean? It means we train to be flexible and operate effectively outside our comfort zones. At least that's how I see it, I guess. For the most part, we've been doing it for years, we just didn't have a cool name for it. And over the last several years, I've seen and documented quite a few shops implementing the multi-capable airman concept. CE, the fire department, security forces. But no shop stands out and epitomizes the MCA concept quite like the clinic. And more specifically, Master Sergeant Kaylee Salerno and her team of TCCC instructors and students. TCCC is Tactical Combat Casualty Care, a program that replaced the older SABC that we all grew up with as young airmen. We could find SABC in our old airmen's manuals, remember? The ones we'd flip through to reference during an FTX or an inspection. Pause. Time out. Let me just whip out my trusty textbook airman's manual out of my BDU cargo pocket and look that up. Not a great plan. But TCCC took what SABC built and amplified it and made it better. Made it more practical and realistic. Which is awesome. Now I've witnessed two Tier 3 TCCC courses and they're awesome to watch. Lots of manual labor and sweating and testing the limits. Learning to work with sister branches and so much more. It's quality training and it's a big deal. I've asked Master Sergeant Salerno to come in and talk about the course and why it's important rather than doing another news article. There's a lot more to take away in a podcast interview and it's quality information. And it's a long one, so stick around and find out why today's medical care workers are training harder and are better equipped than ever before. Here she is. Correct me if I'm wrong. This is your second year doing this here, the TCCC?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
And TCCC, based off what I remember, it kind of replaced self-aid buddy care.
In a big way.
In a big way. Mm-hmm. So it's like a whole new program, right?
Yeah.
So explain, what are the big differences there?
So I got the SABC program back in 2019. It kind of just landed in my lap, one of those things. And I never really understood the importance. It was kind of one of those things that we just kind of did as medical, and it wasn't great. It was just kind of a checkbox thing, and nobody took it super seriously. Because again, we were kind of in a low ops tempo, especially for medical, where that's kind of just what we did. Mm-hmm. And then COVID hit, so TCCC didn't really go anywhere. Mm-hmm. And then it started rolling out a little bit further in 2021-ish. And when I went to my very first course before I became an instructor, we were all like, holy moly, is this different? We were all blown away. We were like, okay. So we went down to Pease in New Hampshire because they had actually had the program, you know, spun up a little bit more than we did. And we were getting all kinds of different stuff that we had never seen, like junctional tourniquets and Crike kits, which is just a fancy word for a cricothyroidotomy, which you're cutting into somebody's trachea and putting in an air tube.
Sounds easy.
Yeah, sure. It definitely is.
No anxiety there.
So it was a big change, you know, throwing in the austere environment and like, you know, playing with weapons we've never seen. Cause again, medical just was never, we never like took that on into the austere environment because we were in a low ops tempo. And now, you know, kind of flash forward to where we are now, we're in a really high ops tempo for medical. So like we're pumping people out the door, and to get to where you're going, you need this training within 6 months of deployment. And obviously medical gets a little bit more than everybody else.
Absolutely.
But the major difference is we're dealing with life-threatening injuries and like all kinds of equipment and medical interventions. You know, semicolon, also you're carrying weapons and stuff like that. So you're really adding in an aspect that medical's never seen before, at home station anyway.
Yeah.
So, you know, as of today, I've been through, I think this is my fifth class I taught.
Oh, wow.
I just came off of. So, it came to this like little seed and now it's this like huge garden of things. And I'm really, really happy that the DOW kind of just wiped the slate with SABC because even talking to other people, like other units, they're like, it's just not helpful. You know, it's kind of very minimal and people are probably going to die, like, if we had to do that. And with TCCC interventions, we really, like, you're going to save some lives, which is really cool to see.
Yeah, well, even just, like, watching you guys, how you guys are doing these courses, like, it just seems more practical, seems more realistic.
Yeah.
You add in the element of, like, just even the other day watching you guys run, or having your students run, mm-hmm. A little bit before, and then come back to their victim or their patient.
Yeah.
Patient.
Well,
sorry,
they probably
about that.
Felt that way at the time.
Yeah, they probably felt like a victim. Run back to their patient, and then that. So just that elevated heart rate alone, yeah. on top of all their gear, mm-hmm. with their weapon, with mm-hmm. their medical stuff. Like, it seems like it adds that element of realism, which makes sense to me.
Yeah. And it's none of the stuff that we do is simulated, except for the mannequins, obviously, but on each other, they're throwing in IV lines. They're doing everything hands on. And when you run 100 yards and then try to put an IV in somebody, it's a lot harder with, 50, 70 pounds of gear on. They're huffing and puffing and shaking and all kinds of stuff.
Versus not having your blouse on and you're relaxed with a t-shirt and you're warm and comfortable, or, cool and comfortable. And that makes a lot more sense.
No, the adrenaline's pumping. They've got noises going off and smoke in front of them, and they learn quickly that, like, it's not as easy as it looks. And that's why we train, because that would be, like, the worst case scenario is to drop somewhere on, like, a fob or something to respond to an incident and be like,
yeah, yeah.
And, like, passing out a little bit, putting an IV in somebody. Yeah.
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 Pulling out your Amron's manual and trying to look up how you do self-care, buddy care.
Yeah. What did she say?
I do remember it being, like, super, like, this, just looking back on my SABC courses, kind of being confused. Like, one year it'd be like, oh yeah, this is how you treat a sucking chest wound. And then the next year it'd be a different process. And then we'd go back to the other way. Like, do we tape down all four sides of your card, or is it three? Like, why do we keep going back and forth?
Again?
Yeah. Like, this is frustrating. I think it's awesome that it seems like you guys are at a place now where, at least for the med group and the people that you're coaching and teaching, that they're actually taking away something that's practical. And I feel like
that's what we keep hearing.
Yeah.
Is that, like, this training is awesome and it's really intense, but it's worth it, and it sticks. It really does. Like, and it's the same across the DOW. That's what I really like about it. It's not just an Air Force program. Cause that was some, I don't want to say tension per se, but some confusion. In a lot of different areas where we are training with the Army, with the Navy, it's all the same. But previous to TCCC, you could call for a medic and you never know what they know.
Yeah.
Because you're like, oh, okay, you're a corpsman. Well, what does your manual say?
Yeah.
And that's not a thing anymore. We all do the same thing. Our march pause assessment, which is how we, like, how we address injuries. And it's all the same.
That's cool.
Across the board, from, like, Space Force to Marines, Army, Navy, all of us are learning the same thing.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So it's a standard. And, they all call it all. It's all TCCC. Everyone calls it the same. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which or is, like, TC3, but it all means the same thing.
Okay. Yes. Are there different levels? Because I know you
said there are.
Yeah. Which makes sense. You guys would need to know more than to say, like, I would if I went downrange or something. That makes a lot more sense.
So with your AFSC, you would get, it's split into, like, four tiers right now. And tier one is called an all service member course, which is, I would say, it's pretty minimal. It's still going to save lives for sure, but you all learn the same thing. So say you're right next to somebody from, like, Air Trans or TMO, like, you guys are going to know how to do the same things. And it's a requirement now for the Air Force to get that training initially, and then to get it 6 months before deployment. So you're kind of fresh before you go out the door. And then tier two, the DOW is looking to incorporate security forces, fire,
and then first responders. Yeah.
All first responders plus, like, how do I explain it? Like, non-medical AFSCs, if that makes sense.
No,
so
it
like,
does. Yeah.
The people at the 101st, like your admin, people, bio, certain types of doctors, like eye doctors, will get tier two. And then tier three is a little bit more intense. And that's when, like, your medics, combat medics and nurses come into play. And then tier four is, like, your surgeons and doctors and all that stuff. So what we just did, add a little more crazy and a little more surgery. And that's tier four.
With what you guys did, the course you taught last year that I covered, was that tier three as well? Or was that a different tier?
That was also tier three. Yeah. Okay. That was our, ground surgical team that we were teaching because tier four hadn't been buttoned up yet, and or released. So they were going out the door. So they needed TCCC. They're like, Kaylee, can you come teach all of these people before they get deployed? I'm like, sure, why not? And it takes a lot of time, like putting the courses together and like getting the Army involved with drops with their helicopters and stuff, but it's so worth it. It's so much fun too. Like, it's the most fun I've had training for sure. And it's not a CBT,
yeah.
which we all love so much, but
I'm sure everybody does.
Yeah. It's a little bit of didactic compared to like, it's probably like 20% didactic and like 80% in the field.
Yeah. So, which is great.
Yeah. It's again, more realistic. Right?
And I'm sure like and the moment, like these, your students are sweating and they're hot and they're hungry or, but that's all realistic stuff. Mm-hmm. Like that's going to happen downrange. So, what's the feedback been like with some of your students, like as far as, was it something that the outcome of the course, is that something they expected? Was it something that they're like, were like, holy crap, this is awesome. Like, I'm so happy that we did this. I would imagine that there's some mixed feedback with that, yeah. especially with our DSG medical providers, I'm sure yeah. that are like, I didn't think I was going to see myself carrying mm-hmm. an M16 or an M4, doing a foot patrol with all my gear.
yeah. I guess it depends on the course, but, this last one I'll talk about because it's most recent. It was a tier three course, which is combat medics, some nurses and some doctors. And like you said, DSG wise, that's really tough for somebody that's not medical on the outside. So we had one student and he is amazing. Sergeant Nelson, he is not medical on the outside and he manages Dick's Sporting Goods.
Oh, really?
So actually like incredibly talented logistics wise. Yeah. And yeah. every time he comes in medically, he's great at it.
Yeah.
And so he was super nervous, I guess at first. Cause he's like, well, I don't know any of this.
I feel intimidated.
That's the point.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they all take a pretest like at the very beginning, just to see like, you know, base knowledge wise, where they're at. And so many students just looked at me with their just huge bug eyes. And they're like, I don't know how to do any of this. I was like, yeah, that's the point.
That's why we're here.
But at the end of it, they were all so confident and they came off of the field training exercise. Like that was so cool. A, they never thought they were going to do that being a DSG. Mm-hmm. But B, they're like, I never had the confidence to stick a scalpel in somebody's neck, yeah. but now I do. So the medics really enjoy it because, during drill weekends, it's really tough. We're doing, you know, patient care, which is minimal here, but we're doing our lab draws and we're doing our skills and stuff like that. But when I can put them in an austere environment and they're actually using combat medic skills, they're like, oh yeah, this is amazing. Yeah. And they're like, give me a weapon. I love it.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's
so
really cool.
They are way more confident now. And we got a lot of positive feedback and mm-hmm. each and every time it gets better. It's way more fun.
That's awesome.
So yeah, we love it.
I'm sure that's a big piece of it too, is that, like you just said, the confidence, like having
big time.
Knowing to, and just trying to relate it to like what I do. If I get a new piece of equipment or new gear, I'm not going to want to just open that up the day I'm supposed to be using it, you know? So otherwise you're going to be sitting there looking up YouTube videos, trying to figure out how to put a lens on a camera
YouTube
or whatever.
University,
yeah.
You
yeah,
know?
Exactly. And you don't have that luxury in what, in the field that you guys work in. Mm-hmm. So, how's that saying go? Like train how you fight or play how you fight or whatever, however that
train
goes.
Train how you play?
Yeah, something like that.
Yep.
So that makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. The standardization part of it is awesome, I think.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and that's honestly so great. And I'm sure you've heard the term like becoming more purple.
Yeah, for sure.
And we are, especially in TCCC. Like we work with the Army often. And they come and teach us kind of their aerial side of the house with a little bit of their combat medic stuff sprinkled in each time we do this. And we're standardizing our medic bags to match each other's.
Oh, cool.
Off of Deployed Medicine, who's our like governing body for this whole program.
Oh, really? Okay. Deployed Medicine. That's what
Deployed Medicine. Yeah. And honestly, like you can download it right on your phone.
Oh, okay.
And it has everything that we learn. But yeah, it's standardized across the board. So if I'm deployed with a corpsman, or with a 68 whiskey or something like that, and I get shot and go down,
they can
and
grab your
like
stuff.
God forbid die, something like that. Like he can take my medic bag and use it
and be familiar with it.
Yes. Yeah. And it's going to be the same across the board. A little bit of morbidity there.
Yeah. No,
sorry,
no, but that's the realism.
It's honest.
That's, yeah. You guys are, you have to train for what your worst case scenario.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
And it's really giving people confidence to work on their own. Like in a hospital setting, you have a doctor typically telling you what to do or something like that.
Kind of
like,
guiding you.
You are that doctor, yeah, like in the field.
You're the manager.
Yeah. And especially during the FTX, they're solely relying on themselves, which is something they're not used to. And it's pretty spot on in a deployed setting that you're going to have like one medic, maybe two.
Yeah.
Per like team of people that might be responding to something. So like, you've got to be confident in what you're doing or you're going to.
Yeah. Eat it.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. Yeah. It could cost your life or somebody else's.
Right. Exactly. And that's what we're trying to prevent.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. So you said 2019, that's when it kind of, this program kind of started to take
shape. We started getting like the DODI started dropping of like, hey, this is going to happen. Start preparing, which is basically like start ordering stuff that you'll need. And I remember coming into work, it was a drill weekend, I assume, something like that. And there was like 5 or 6 Pelican cases and new two stuff, mannequins just like from NGB. And I was like,
what are those doing?
I was like, what are these? So I started, you know, ripping into them and I was like, oh my gosh, this is for TCCC. And then unfortunately, everything just kind of died off for a while because of COVID. Now we're like up and running. And
it seems like state of the art equipment. Like
it seems like
those mannequins are crazy.
Oh yeah. The mannequins blink, bleed, scream, breathe. Like it's wild what you can do to them.
I'm glad that they, and every unit got those, like essentially.
I think so. Cause we all talk to each other, like the program managers across the country. If we like need extra equipment or we need additional instructors or something like that, we all just kind of like work together.
That's cool.
And I'm like, hey, my mechanical arm fell off. What do I do here? They're like, oh, no. It's okay. It's if you want to replace it with an amputated arm, you can. I'm like, oh, okay, yep. Good.
That's cool. That's awesome.
Yeah. YouTube University for sure.
I know.
Cause we have the iPads that control them.
That's right. Yeah.
And I'm like, I had no idea what I was doing at first. Just figured it out.
That's sort of crazy that they breathe and they bleed. That's so wild.
Yeah. It's crazy. And again, adds another level of realism because obviously like we're not going to use real people that cut into their neck. Like obviously not.
That'd be weird.
But a little bit.
And frowned upon.
And maybe a little frowned upon. You were talking about victims earlier. The mannequins are our victims.
So
it's really awesome. And North American Rescue is who basically like we order all of our restock through. Fantastic company. Like if you ever needed to order medical supplies or even just like the cat tourniquets that everybody carries, their stuff is just state of the art. And like they have, you know, neck replacements that actually feels like skin. And when you cut into it, it'll bleed like skin.
Wow.
Yeah. It's wild.
That is crazy. I'm glad that they kind of hit, like kind of went all in on this program then and actually like
they really did.
Funded that instead of like, you know, like a cheaper version that you open up a Pelican case and there's 3 Furbies sitting inside. And you're like, oh, great. What am I supposed to do?
You know, what's fun though is that you do open one and there sometimes is a fake dog in it.
Because
we train for canine response.
Wow, that's crazy. Have you guys gotten a dog?
Not yet. It's unfortunate. But in my instructor course, we had the dog, which was awesome because I'm a previous vet tech. So I was something I know.
Right in your world, right in your realm.
Yeah.
So, that's crazy.
And the same thing that the state-of-the-art mannequin dog also like barks and bleeds and
whimpers or something.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
At like pain response.
Holy crap. I didn't realize they had a dog version.
Mm-hmm.
That's insane.
It's pretty cool. And I hope that we get it. Just because, again, a lot of people have no idea that you can't just put a normal tourniquet on a dog because their joints are little bit weirdly placed. So like a junctional tourniquet on a dog looks a lot different than on a human.
I bet. That makes
so
a lot of sense.
You have to kind of improvise.
Yeah.
But, and they can't get like the same medications because they'll die. So really like medics would only intervene with a dog if their handler was killed in action or something like that. Because the handlers know more than we do.
Right. Because they're kind of trained for it. Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah. It's pretty cool adding in the canine aspect as well. Yeah.
And that seems realistic because if you were saying earlier, you go to a FOB and you go anywhere, there's going to be some sort of handler, whether it's a special operator handler or a security forces handler or whatever.
Right. But if they get, you know, knocked out or if they're injured and unresponsive, we need to know how to treat their canine as well, because obviously, again, they're going to know more, but the canines have their own IFACs, which are sweet.
On their on
typically,
their kit?
Yes, or on the handler, and they'll have their own medications that are safe to give the canine as well.
That makes sense.
Because obviously we can't give them Tylenol. We can't give them certain pain meds and stuff like that, because it'll kill them. So, yeah.
That's it's crazy. Cool. I didn't know that. That's
wild. There's so many aspects to TCCC. It's so fun.
So is it this? Would you say the company was
North American Rescue?
North American Rescue.
Oh my gosh, they're fantastic.
And they produce just like human mannequins and canine mannequins. Mm-hmm. Do they do other stuff too? Or is it just
that's all I've seen so far.
Which makes
sense. They do like your normal like stump, I guess you could call it, with like bullet holes in it. So like ASM people, so the tier one people. So basically all DOW wide gets the same training, that tier one or level one training. And they have that stump. It kind of looks like a upper portion of a leg.
Oh,
and
weird.
It just has bullet holes in it. So like you understand how to like hold pressure and like pack a wound properly so it stops bleeding.
Without having to pay for the whole body.
Right.
Which I'm sure is way more expensive.
You're
going to
pay like $300 instead of like, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars for.
That's crazy. And they're heavy, aren't they? Like the full body ones.
It's so realistic in the adding another layer of realism, right? Typically you get a female and a male mannequin that comes in. And I think the female weighs 150, 160, and the male weighs 250 to 280.
Wow.
Which is...
That's heavy for a male. Yeah, that's crazy.
Especially if you... we learn like drags and carries too. And if you've got somebody that's dead weight, regardless of... Even if they're like 100 pounds.
Still a lot.
Added in all of their gear, you're pushing that 150 anyway. So like learning how to dead weight drag somebody over your shoulders, something that we teach.
On top of all the other gear you already have on and your weapon.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
And, you know, we're taught to leave all of their gear on until we get them to cover before we start looking for holes, because we want to protect the box is what we call it, from like collarbone to hips. We want to protect the box and the head as far as we can. So that's added weight and it's heavy. So
what have been the reactions and the responses to that? Like
lots of swear words, I would say, because they don't really put hands on the mannequins until we do the portion of drags and carries, which is like, I don't know, a couple hours into the first day. And they have to, what we've decided anyway, is they'll run, I don't know, like 30, 50 yards to a patient. So it's a mannequin that's got a vest and a uniform and a helmet and everything. And they kind of like, ooh, and they're like, oh my gosh, because they're used to the mannequins we used to get, which are hollow and plastic and they're very light.
I think that's so cool though. That does mm-hmm. add weight, like that. That's a lot.
It's realistic.
Yeah.
And especially again, you're not going to be dealing with, hopefully military wide, we're dealing with, you know, in shape people that are, you know, in great shape. But again, that the most common male weight is like, I don't know, a little over 200 pounds. And the most common female is a little like 150 to 180 ish in that range with equipment and stuff like that. So again, that added level of realism is incredible.
That's super cool.
And they understand body mechanics real fast.
I bet they do.
So, you know, use your legs, not your back.
We
had, unfortunately, one person vomited this last time, just because of, I don't know how it happened, but he just like dropped what he was doing and vomited in the woods and came back. And he's like, that was a lot harder than I expected.
Because of the strenuous work or because of the sights or the.
I think so. I think he just overworked himself because he wasn't prepared. Then he started preparing himself a little bit better.
Well, that's good.
Came into
that's
class a, hydrated and, you know, not so dehydrated, we'll say. We'll put it that way.
That's good. No, that's great. That's the whole point.
It's realistic. Yeah. It's the most real we can get it without obviously using real people, which we do throw in for the field training exercise, but they're like walking wounded or crazy people. Terrorists, stuff like that.
Yeah. And then that would add a whole nother element too, especially if you're, I think I saw that last year when you guys were doing before the helicopter had come in. Mm-hmm. So your students would set up like a 360 perimeter on, and then you'd have a couple medical care providers or combat medics that were performing field dressing and medical care on a patient, not victim. And then you add in, like you said, the sounds and the gunshots and the firefights, and that's a lot. I think that's great. That's super cool that you guys are doing that. So what is your, like, for tier three, specifically from start to finish, like, what's the program look like? Like, what are you guys going through?
So each day we've got a little bit of didactics, we'll say. So from start to finish, we're looking at, like, very minimal interventions for life threats. And then we're taking it all the way through evacuation. So it's called a march pause assessment. And I'll just talk my way through it. M is for massive hemorrhage, right? So we're addressing any type of arterial bleeding. So any type of, like, we call it junctional bleeding. So in your, like, armpits or your hips, and any type of artery. So, like, the big veins, arteries underneath your skin that pop open with a wound or a blast or amputation, stuff like that. We're putting tourniquets on, junctional tourniquets. And then, A is for airway. So, it's actually pretty gnarly. If they don't have an airway right off the bat, and they're not breathing, we'll throw in an NPA, which is nasopharyngeal airway. It's this green tube that goes right in the right nostril, and it sucks, but we make all of our students do it on each other, during the class. And it's for a reason, because if you go too slow on somebody, it's really painful.
Yeah.
But if you kind of just go straight into the point, like, you're like, oh, that wasn't that bad.
Really? Like, kind of ripping the Band-Aid off type thing. Yeah.
And with recent studies, deployed medicine has gotten rid of any other airway except for a crike at that point. So you're either, we all thought that was, like, wild at first. So you're going from an NPA to a crike hole right in the neck, and there's nothing in between.
Wow. Yeah, that seems kind of crazy.
It is. It is, especially if the patient's conscious and we have to give them meds at that point.
R is screaming.
I know. I've seen it. I've seen it in real world. R is just for respiration. So that's either bagging your patient or seeing if they're breathing properly. So we're looking for chest rise and fall. And if it's one-sided, you're typically looking for a hole. So that's where your chest seals come in. And if that doesn't help, you're putting in what's called a needle decompression, which is a pretty long needle that goes right in the side of your chest, to try to let air escape, in layman's terms. I'll just keep it simple. C is for circulation. So that just means, like, the blood in your body. If you've lost a lot so far, we're going to replace it with blood. And that's insane. So typically we'll carry cold stored blood with us as medics, a little bit at least. And if not, we can do what's called, like, a field donor, which is wild.
So, is that like when you're taking blood from somebody with the same blood type?
So we're looking for O negative people first, and then we're looking for matches as well. So, like, if we don't have any O negatives or your walking blood bank, fun fact, it's Sergeant Brown for the med group.
Okay.
She's O negative.
Lucky her.
I know. Yeah. She's like, come on.
Yeah. Are you kidding me?
Or we're looking for matches. So I'm A positive, and I know a couple people that are also A positive. And we're, you know, sticking 16 gauge needles in somebody and drawing right there in the field.
Wow.
Into a bag, and then literally switching off the line and putting it right back into somebody else. It's crazy.
And you teach that in this course?
Yes.
Wow. That's cool. I didn't realize that.
It's pretty crazy. Yeah. Huh. And then after that, we're looking at, H, which is hypothermia and head injuries. Hypothermia is your silent killer from blood loss, which a lot of people kind of associate hypothermia with a cold weather injury.
Yeah.
Which for sure.
Makes sense.
But with severe blood loss, you're looking at hypovolemic shock. So the body temperature just can't keep up. So we're treating that at the same time. And then we're looking at head injuries, which we can't really do much for in the field. But if anyone has a TBI or a concussion, something like that, from a blast or anything, they're going to get evacuated first, like with urgent evacuation people. Again, not much we can do for them, but except for give them what's a drug called TXA. I'll just keep it simple with calling it TXA.
Yeah, it's probably good.
But they could be bleeding in the brain, so we give it to them to slow that down. And then your pause side of the house is your non-life threats. So your pain meds, your antibiotic medication, then you're addressing any, like, lesser wounds, amputation, parts. Yeah. So like if a leg gets blown off, you're addressing, you know, the leg. And then you're splinting any fractures, and that's the March pause assessment. So I teach them all of the interventions, how to give pain meds, their proper doses, stuff like that, and how they can, you know, save lives. That's the whole point.
That's awesome.
But yeah, it's intense for a reason.
Yeah. do you find that having DSGs that do this on the outside, do these individuals, these doctors and nurses bring some of their expertise to the course as well? Or is it just strictly like, hey, this is what DOW TCCC is saying, like, this is what we're doing to keep that standardization we talked about earlier?
I would say I love some of the aspects that clinical workers can bring. I do. It's sometimes it's helpful. Other times it's almost easier teaching non-clinical workers, because I always say that they're going to have to take the hospital out of their brain. Cause they're like, oh, how do we, you know, sterilize this wound, or how are we doing it this way? Or why my doctor doesn't tell me to do it in the hospital this way. And, you know, I kind of have to explain again and again that this is a deployed setting. We are in the field. So you're not going to have a sterile field. You're not going to, you know, you're going to have a pretty dirty looking wound, and you're going to have to leave it. That's why we give antibiotics. So it's almost easier, like, teaching people that have no knowledge of a hospital setting rather than nurses and doctors and stuff, which do bring like a certain amount of understanding in the sense of like medical terminology. They already know what I'm talking about when I talk about IV drip rates and yada yada. They're like, oh yeah, okay, got it. You can push. But I have to turn that side of their brain off, and it's hard for some of them, for sure.
I bet they used to say the same thing with CADM. Like, it was easier to teach individuals on the range how to, with a new weapon system that don't regularly fire or shoot guns, because you'd get the people in there that have, or that were either prior service or other cops or avid hunters, and 100%. they just turn off their listening ears when they're being instructed, because they already know it. And so they would say the same thing, that it was easier to teach someone who with a clean slate, because they're like actually listening, because they've never done it before. So they want to, so that makes sense.
The feel, it's called a field ruggedized IV, blew their minds.
Really? What is that?
Because in a hospital, right, you're going to clean the site. You're going to place the IV catheter in the arm. You're going to have a nice little T-port is what it's called. Yeah. And then you're going to hook up your line and secure it and all that fun stuff.
While you're watching Days of Our Lives on TV.
And in TCCC, the IV catheter goes on, the cap goes on, and you put Tegaderm over the entire thing. And that's it. And it's super easy. Keeps it clean. And if you have to hook up a line, it goes right through the port that we attached. And if it gets ripped out, which is a common problem, it doesn't rip out the entire IV access. It just rips out the line. Mm-hmm. And again, that's like something that came from a special forces guy like years and years and years ago. And the deployed medicine was like, I like it.
Yeah, that's cool.
We're going to keep that.
That's awesome.
It blew their minds. It was like, wait. Yeah. They're like, it's covered. What do we do?
Yeah.
Like you just poke through it.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Blew their minds.
That's crazy. And so that's pretty much the whole tier three course.
In a nutshell. Yeah. And we throw in the field training exercise and bring in some firepower for sure.
That's cool.
You know, the evacuation process gets them calling in 9 lines, gets them.
I bet.
Every single time they hop on a radio and they just go, I did it too.
Yeah, that's a lot to remember.
We're not used to it.
No.
And so we're like, wait, do I call you first or do I say my name first? Wait, how do we do this?
Yeah.
And I wish we got a little bit more time in the course for that, but that's okay. They get the gist.
I think we used to have cheat sheets that we just keep in our kit. That was
because we still do.
Yeah, because you can't remember all that. That's a lot.
And if you do, congratulations, because it's impressive.
And maybe you're just doing it a lot at that point, so you just kind of have it memorized. And
Security forces, phenomenal at it, because they you know, use radio communication all the time.
Yeah.
Us medical people, we do not.
Well, it's because you also have a lot of other things you're doing too. Like, and that's what I think the beauty in this course is that you're introducing all that. So again, like, whether it is, doing 360 security and having to engage and fire back and on an enemy while your team is treating somebody else. And it just seems like there's a lot going on. And I think that type of training, that concept, that multi-capable airman concept that we've talked about so many times over the last few years.
It really brings it in.
Yeah. That's like the opinion. When I think of that now, I think of what I've seen you guys do, because that's something that's, I don't know, I just think it's great. As an, like an outsider's perspective, you see it and it's like, this is really quality, good stuff. Like that they're, especially if like you see people like sweating and struggling, and that's the whole point. Like Correct. That's the point to see that. So it may not be fun for them in the moment, but I'm sure they look back out and like, oh, this is actually really good stuff.
Days like one and two, they're like, what is this?
What am I doing? Yeah.
And they really understand the importance now of holding a perimeter and doing security and, you know, really like actually frisking people that like they find like injured civilians or somebody that might be wanting to hurt US military members. Like we throw in all that stuff for a reason. And you know, the first couple times through the FTX are pretty rough in the sense of like we, you know, quote unquote killed a bunch of people because they weren't paying attention. And again, we throw in that realism of like, okay, if you get shot with a sim round or a paintball, you need to treat yourself. And if you die, well, you're killed in action. Sorry. Type of thing. And they understand holding perimeter, especially at like a casualty control point, which is where you bring all your injured people together to start working on them before you get evacuated. And if you don't hold that perimeter, somebody's going to kick the door in and like throw a grenade and kill everybody. Yeah. So like you have to maintain that. And some people, especially medical people, don't want to be away from their patient. Like we have that huge heart for people. And so like if we're working on people, you kind of just have to, you got to like tamper that down a little bit in a deployed setting, because I might need you to go hold a perimeter and you're going to need a break. So like we've got to figure out some type of system. And it really is incredible to watch like the first iteration of an FTX versus like the second or third, because they're all working so much better together come time two or time three. And it's so great to watch happen.
You as the instructor are watching it and you're like, okay, I'm doing.
We're like, okay, we did it right.
My job's working. Yeah, I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. Yeah.
And thank God we have a good instructor team too. Because like I could not do this by myself.
How many instructors do you guys have?
Currently there's three of us. Okay. We're sending three or four more out the door next year.
Wow.
Because it's just been a lot, especially on me. Yeah. But thank God Dan Sheriff came home. He was deployed for a while, so he made it home, luckily, nice and safe and sound. And I'm like, hey, I need you. And thank God he is the way that he is, because he's like, oh, yeah,
I'll do it.
Oh, man, let's go.
That's awesome.
And so luckily it was him and I that just ran this last course, because it wouldn't have been impossible by myself.
Yeah.
I've done it alone, not 6 months pregnant.
Yeah.
But I've done it alone. So it was really nice to have him here. That was, and he's super supportive and did everything I needed. And Captain Richter's our other instructor, excuse me. So he just had some stuff going on. He's crazy. He's trying to become, I think, an NP or a nurse practitioner right now, or a PA maybe. So he's just deep in school, and him and I are both like, we've got it. Like, you're fine. But yeah, without our instructor team, there's no way like all of this would have happened.
No,
so
I bet.
It's great.
What's the instructor course to learn how to become an instructor? What's that like?
Hard.
How long is it?
I think it's 16 days.
Okay.
All in all. So 14 days of actual course instruction, then a day on either end to get acclimated and then to go home. But, the instructor course is intense for a reason. You have to go through the course itself again. So for us, it was tier three, cause that's what we're teaching. So we had to take the whole course and then we had to teach a course. So that's why it's so long. You know, it's intense. We did about the same amount of stuff. It was just a little bit more. our FTX was crazy. And you know, it was in Alpena, Michigan.
Cool.
Yeah. So that was fun. But the instructors were intense for sure. We had a CCAT person. So somebody that's in the air, typically like a flight medic that's working with patients. We had him as an instructor, another female instructor. And then one of the ones that stuck out most to me was Sergeant Seth Pack. He's U.S. Air Force. And he's like, he goes crazy with these courses. Like he puts people up in the mountains and they do all kinds of seer stuff involved. Wow. So getting his expertise was amazing and getting his help was amazing. But yeah, it was the same course, just a little bit more intense. And they actually had funding at Alpena for us to work with cadavers, which is, a little weird if you're not used to it, but it was really nice to actually place a Craig tube in an actual human body. Rather than a mannequin, because you can kind of feel, I know it's kind of gross, but you can feel the differences. And anatomically speaking, everything's a little bit more slippery and kind of harder to handle. And so,
plus your nerves are up a little bit. And it's just stuff that a mannequin can't replicate, no matter how much money.
Right. Matter how hard we try. It was just a little bit more intense. And it's intense for a reason, because this course should be taken seriously. And so, if you want to become an instructor, you need to like have a certain way about you. And we had people fail out, which was a bummer, but at the same time, like kind of maybe they learn a little bit about like, oh my gosh, this is actually going to be hard to teach. And it is, but it's worth it to go through it. And I would suggest it to anybody that wants to try for sure. But
you have to be, have a certain FSC to go through the course.
For tier three. Yes. Yeah. And, luckily the, our functional area manager has been working really closely with like all of the DOW in the sense of they're like, all right, if they're a tier three instructor, like obviously they can teach down. And that wasn't really a thing at first. They were like, no, like we'll have tier one instructors and we'll have tier two instructors and we'll have tier three instructors. And it's just not realistic. Yeah. So I've taught all tiers now. And it's awesome. It's actually fun when I can teach a tier one course. It's like, okay, all right, we've got three skills to learn, guys. Yeah. We can do this. So it's good. I would highly, highly suggest anybody wants to get involved with TCCC to do it. Mm-hmm. Cause militarily it's great, but like I've used it on the outside, with a couple car accidents that I've seen happen. And a guy, my husband and I were hiking in Zion. And we come across this guy who's like face down on the rocks. And we're like, oh my gosh. And he's, you know, bleeding from the head. And I'm like, okay. Yeah. Luckily, like as just a medic, I carry some stuff with me always.
Yeah.
But he didn't know who he was. He's bleeding from the head. I'm like, oh my gosh. And if TCCC taught me anything is to keep my composure. And so threw my gloves on, wrapped his head, and Charlie and I did a two-man carry the rest of the way down.
Holy crap. That's
the
crazy.
The trail. And I wouldn't necessarily say I would have freaked out without TCCC, but I wouldn't have known what to do. And so it's cool to see it transfer like in real life.
That is cool.
I'm like, oh my gosh.
That's awesome.
Here we go.
You didn't call in a 9-line. Like
I didn't call in a 9-line. Yeah. No, I actually ended up meeting a ranger, thank God, at the bottom. But
that's crazy. Charlie turns his head for 1 second, turns back, and you're in full kit and uniform. Like, how'd you change that quick? What is going on? Where'd that radio come from? Why are you holding an M4?
Where'd you get that gun?
Bears. It could be bears out here. That's crazy. That's crazy. Yeah. That's awesome. That's the type of stuff you hear about. It's cool to hear that story, like that, those types of stories where it's like you've utilized the training you've gotten out here.
Yeah.
So that's crazy. So you said something about being able to teach down. So like you're able to teach two and one.
Yes.
But not four.
Correct.
Okay. I just want to make sure I understood that right.
So yeah, I would be way out of my element if I tried to teach tier four.
Really?
It's insane. It's so crazy.
Have you guys taught, two and one
to others. Yeah, we actually had some security forces join our tier two course like 2 or 3 months ago.
Okay. That's awesome.
And they're fantastic. And I think that they should know a little bit more because they're first responders.
Absolutely.
So, you know, if they're on the front line, like they're going to see these types of injuries first until I can get there. Cause I'm typically not going to be right on the front line. I mean, a lot of the time, I'm typically going to be in that second or third wave. So if they can keep somebody stable until I can get there with the tier two skills, I think all of them should know it. And I think that's the goal for them. To kind of start sprinkling in people with our tier two courses for sure. And it was awesome, honestly, like working in tandem with other AFSCs. Cause we're like, oh my gosh, they held a hell of a security perimeter
that's what they know. Yeah.
And they were clearing buildings and stuff, like, which isn't something we necessarily think of, but they're so used to doing their thing. So during the FTX, it was cool to watch them go into their security mode and then like the medical go into medical mode and then have them all come together and like learn. Work with people. It was very cool.
That is cool.
And then tier one, I haven't taught too much tier one now because we have so many instructors across the base that can do it now. When TCCC started to first roll out, like I taught one at maintenance and one at security.
Oh, wow.
And then everybody luckily has just taken it to the next level, thank God.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's super cool.
Now, like, the wing is pretty well trained, I would say, all in all.
Yeah. It sounds like you guys are proud of the program and what you guys are doing.
I mean, deeply passionate about it.
Yeah.
It's like, well, we really care.
It's working. Yeah. Like, that's the cool part, and it's practical. Mm-hmm. And I'm assuming that DOW-wide, that's kind of the same perception, mm-hmm. right, of the program. Because if you guys are happy with it, I'm sure other units are too.
Well, it's one of those programs that's constantly changing for the better, mm-hmm. you know, like, and we're getting feedback already from our current conflicts from medical standpoints, to what's working, what's not working. And we're already making those changes and like implementing those changes. Like, our medications just changed. I think some of them started to change in May, and then they're getting implemented now because they're working where we are currently. And it's one of those things that people get frustrated with sometimes, because they're like, training material is constantly changing. How am I supposed to keep up with it? But luckily, Deployed Medicine's pretty on top of it, like keeping things up to date as information's coming into the, what's called the joint trauma system. So all of our DD form 1380s, which is, kind of like where all of our treatments go on a casualty, are already getting uploaded and already coming back with information of stuff that we need to change or fix.
That's awesome.
Yeah. It's pretty wild.
That's cool.
Yep.
It's a breath of fresh air to like see a program, like a new program come in, and people are actually genuinely, like, for the most part, happy and satisfied with it. Like, that's pretty cool. Cause sometimes when change happens, especially out here or in the military in
general, everybody goes,
yeah, I don't like change. Like, I don't want to do that. I want to stick with what I know. Mm-hmm. I've used this analogy a lot actually, but, probably more than I should have, but, in security forces, you know, like, I think of when I was a young airman and watching and having these courses be taught on like basic, like, handcuffing procedures, right? So like, how do you detain, somebody with handcuffs, and like, and good and bad, like, you would have DSGs, and you'd have full timers that like would, there was never one solid procedure or guideline on how to do that. And like the state police do it differently than the sheriff's office. The sheriff's office does it differently than the army, you know? And so now, a lot of times, and I'm sure you guys get it, I know you guys get it, but sometimes like you'd have people arguing about it, and it was like, it was, you know, or like, hey, no, this is the best. And it's like, well, listen, what, and I remember as a young kid, like thinking, how does the Air Force want us to do it? Cause that's the way we need to be teaching and doing it. But there was no standard.
That's
tough, you know, that is tough. And so I always wonder that with you guys, and I see it with CE, like if I deploy or go somewhere with CE, you might have, people from former Red Horse squadrons or Prime Beef squadrons from different units, which generally speaking, they are in sync, but then you have drill status guardsmen that are contractors or construction workers doing, and there's a different way to do it. But a lot of times though, that outside perspective brings in a new element of like positivity, where you might have,
oh, for sure.
Like, hey, let's do it this way. Oh yeah. That's way more efficient. Let's do that.
We did that a lot last course, honestly. And that's why I really like the way that, especially, you know, Sergeant Sheriff and I are very similar in the way that we teach. It's a very like relaxed environment, because I want you to take away the information. I don't want this to be something that's so rigid that you're so worried about passing the exam or passing the tactical trauma assessment that you forget why we're here. And there was a lot of back and forth that was constructive. It wasn't like, well, this is the way we should do it. Like, no. Of course there's better ways to do it. And that's what's so great about this program, is that yes, there's a written test. That's pretty black and white. Yes, there's a trauma assessment that you have to pass. That's pretty black and white. Mm-hmm. But when it comes down to real world application, if you have a better way to do something, tell me. Mm-hmm. And at the very end, we have a course critique for a reason. And people are always like, oh my gosh, another critique.
Here we go.
But luckily I was like, no, take this seriously, because what happens with this information is I take it all and I write it all up to NGB and I send it to them, and they actually implement changes. And so, again, it's very fluid. There's not so much like, I am your teacher and you will do it this way. It's very much like, okay, do you have a better way to give this medication? Or have you seen more allergic reactions? Or do you have a faster way to put in a Craig tube other than what we're doing? Mm-hmm. And yes, now, like, you know, there's this thing called a Craig hook, which is basically to pull the trachea up so you can see it.
Oh, yeah.
However,
I bought one of those on Amazon.
Oh, perfect. Yeah, yeah. Perfect. I'm glad that you use it. but for me personally, I find it easier because I've got smaller fingers. I stick my finger in it and I pull it up with my finger. And that way I'm like, oh, and I stick it in that way. And a lot of the female students that are similar, like smaller fingers like me, they're like, oh, this works a lot faster than to try to like stick the hook down in there. And they're like, oh, okay, I get it. And it's very much fluid. It's not so rigid that we can't move around. Yeah. And people that are coming in with like, from like a trauma bay, in a hospital, they're like, oh, I've seen this type of injury before and I've done this instead. I'm like, oh, that sounds, let's give it a whirl and see what happens. So I like that aspect a lot. And again, the DOW is like, as long as they're getting the information, like, great, keep teaching it.
That's awesome.
You can make it your own.
That's cool.
Just make sure they pass the test and get the certificate. And we have the
same outcome. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's true. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's super cool. So overall, like how, based off what you've done and as an instructor and seen skill sets and mm-hmm. your students are learning a lot, which is great. Mm-hmm. And learning about a lot about themselves too, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. How does it feel as the instructor with this program here to see that? Like, is it must bring some sort of a sense of satisfaction and pride, right?
I would assume. Yeah. Yeah, I can only say like pride and joy, like to watch from the very beginning of like utter confusion, no self-confidence, constant questioning to like the very end of everything being like, I can most certainly do this. And again, down in the med group, I'm in charge of the medics training and we do this every month. It's not like not the whole course by any means, but we split up the skill set so they don't lose them, especially as DSGs. But yeah, it must be the same for teachers or professors or something to watch like almost utter failure at the very beginning to like passing with flying colors and like actually like, yeah, you would have saved this person like 100%. And, you know, to watch them be proud of themselves too, is just fulfilling. And it kind of just, when the instructor staff is just like utterly exhausted by the end of everything. And you're like, oh my gosh, like, how am I going to do this again in a couple of weeks? You're like, okay. And then you see the students and you see their feedback and you hear their feedback and they're like, this was incredible. I can't believe like we can do this in this type of setting. I'm like, yeah, I know.
I knew you could.
I know. Yeah. I knew it from the beginning.
Yeah.
So it just like kind of recharges our batteries. And to know that I can trust the person sitting next to me to save my life, like when it came down to it, and to trust them with it, like that's pretty cool. Like all in all, to look both left and right and be like, wow, yeah, they're ready to jump in and save me if needed with like anything.
That's awesome.
To have them not be nervous to cut into a neck is great.
Yeah, that's a good thing. That's a good thing.
Let's do it.
Yeah, let's do it. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. And then, like you said earlier, too, like going down range, and if you're in a purple environment or a joint environment, like knowing that the corpsman beside you has the same training.
The same stuff.
Same kit, too, which is cool. Mm-hmm. That's super cool. That's a good conversation. Is there anything you want to add? Anything we didn't talk about you want to mention?
I don't think so, honestly. I try to get more information out to people just because, especially in the wing. So I guess I do have something to add. I said okay. No, and then I kept talking.
That's how it works.
but especially in the wing, I would suggest like getting to know other AFSCs. And we're trying, you know, it's tough right now, just with our tempo, but, it's tough to see medical from the outside. You know, you look at our building and you see one thing. And to dive into all the different types of people in medical is amazing. And I would suggest doing that for everybody, like diving into PA and like knowing more about what you guys do. That always intrigues me.
Yeah.
And taking on this. Right. You're like, I learn new stuff every day.
Yeah.
but to actually like learn who our other maniacs are, I think is really important. And I think you're doing a great job with that. Just having me sit here and talk about, you know, TCCC.
Share your story.
Because I guarantee you, I feel like 75% of the base is like, what do they do again?
Can't even spell it.
Exactly. TCCC. T-E-E.
Five. Yeah.
Yeah. And I would just get to know your other people because you know as well as I do that, like, we're going to possibly be deployed next to people that you don't know what they do. So get to know your people and yeah.
That's awesome. Where do you see the program going? Do you think it's here to stay?
Oh yeah.
That's
it's
good.
Just, it's so effective.
That's awesome.
That I really don't see. I see it constantly changing, which is great. We're adding, I think in a couple years, looking down the pipeline a little bit, we're adding a prolonged field care attachment to it. Which is just learning how to operate like in the field, in a tent with these people for like days at a time.
Wow.
Prior to evacuation.
Before help comes, I think.
Yeah. Because help isn't always instant.
No.
And that's kind of one thing that I would change, I guess, about the program is like, you know, they're waiting for an evacuation for maybe like 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Where in a couple of locations across the world, like you're not going to get immediate help.
Yeah.
So we need to lean on what we can do for longer. So that aspect's going to get added, which I'm excited about. But
that's awesome.
Yeah.
I'm assuming there's probably room for feedback from your students at the end of the course.
Absolutely.
Is there feedback options or avenues from the instructors to like say,
yes.
Would you call it the surgical medicine? No.
The tier four thing?
No. The, who controls the standardization is something medicine you said.
Oh, deployed medicine.
Deployed medicine. No, yeah. I said surgical medicine.
I was like, well, deployed medicine. You could.
So like do they offer avenues for instructors to provide feedback? That's cool. I figured probably.
Yeah. So each time we teach, we get, you know, feedback from the students. And then, you're supposed to not grade. That's not the right word.
like assess or like,
The other instructor. And give feedback for them. So lateral feedback for the instructors. And then there's a whole, I guess, page of paperwork that we fill out of like, how can we make the course better? What can we add? What can we take away? What's too redundant? And then all of that gets like prettily packaged and gets sent up to NGB. And they're taking it seriously.
That's awesome.
Everything that I've ever pushed forward, I've seen it change.
That's cool.
Pretty rapidly. Or it gets addressed at least. If there's like an issue with the deployed medicine site itself, that's who we test through. So like sometimes the test questions are a little weird or oddly worded or just flat out incorrect. So,
yeah.
I mean, that gets just changed quickly just, with NGB. So it's good that there's no like wiggle room for things to get missed. There's like a step from the students, from us to each other to NGB, and it gets addressed. So it's awesome.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's great. Yeah. That's a lot. I appreciate you coming in and doing this.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. This is fun.
Yeah. I think like we said this, said
way
before.
Better.
Yeah. Better than,
I like
a,
it.
Than a four or five, paragraph article. Yeah, we'll do it again. Keep me in the loop and we'll, you guys have a schedule when your next course is, you must, right?
I'm going on a pretty long break from like October to March just because of our drill schedule and the Moms Act and stuff. So probably looking at April, for another tier two iteration and then June for a tier three, something like that.
Nice. That's awesome. We'll keep us in the loop. We'll make sure we come out and grab some photos. I appreciate your time.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah, of course.
So there, listening to what Master Sergeant Salerno's team is doing to implement the multi-capable airman concept kind of makes me think I need to step it up a notch. They are the tip of the spear, and they're doing great things. Hopefully you guys can browse through the collection of released photos that I'll attach to this episode so you can get a better visualization of their training and what they're doing. I hope everyone has a great week and that you enjoy the last few weeks of summer. I'm Senior Master Sergeant Andy Sinclair with the 101st Air Refueling Wing Public Affairs Office, and this is the Maniac Radio Show. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. Goodbye.